velkommen Brian Klaviter. Brian Klaviter er fra Missouri-synoden, vores søsterkirke i USA, har været i Tyskland og i Irak i 6 år som chaplain, som soldaterpræst, og vil fortælle os om det i dag. I morgen vil du prædike for os i gudstjenesten. I dag bliver det på engelsk, i morgen bliver det på norsk.
It's great to be here with you today.
Det er dejligt at være sammen med jer i dag.
So I'm going to speak in English a little bit about my experiences as a military chaplain, mostly somewhat an overview, somewhat in Iraq, and then somewhat some other stuff.
Jeg vil give jer et overblik over, hvordan det var at være soldaterpræst i Irak, også i Tyskland, og give jer lidt et overblik og også nævne noget andet for jer.
Just to begin with, in some ways, my life as a pastor, as clergy, can be summarized with my time as a chaplain, because I was ordained, and 6 weeks later I was in Iraq.
Min tid som præst kan sammenfattes på den måde, at jeg har været soldaterpræst. Kort efter jeg blev ordineret, så blev jeg udsendt.
I had had my training prior to my ordination, my chaplain training, and then I just had enough time at my first base to get my shots, get my equipment, and go to a week of training, and then I was out the door.
Jeg fik noget træning, og så blev ordineret, og så måtte jeg afsted.
So in many ways, my first congregation, if you will, you'll see a picture later. Actually, the first time I ever celebrated the Lord's Supper as pastor or chaplain, all that happened in Iraq. So I have a lot of memories there.
Første gang jeg holdt gudstjeneste med nadver, det var i Irak, så jeg har mange gode minder derfra.
But we'll save Iraq for a little bit later. First, I want to talk about what the chaplaincy, military chaplaincy, is.
Før jeg går nærmere ind på, hvordan det var i Irak, vil jeg nævne lidt om, hvordan det er at være chaplain, soldaterpræst.
So, the chaplaincy means different things to different organizations.
At være chaplain, det betyder forskellige ting i forskellige organisationer.
For the church categorizes chaplains as missionaries.
I kirkelig sammenhæng, der forstår man en chaplain som en missionær.
Who also take care of some of the Lutheran folk, their own Lutheran folk. So it's sort of a dual role.
Som udover at være missionær og række ud til andre, så tager han også vare på lutherske soldater.
But the government doesn't really see it that way.
Men regeringen betragter ikke en soldaterpræst på den måde.
So for the government, the chaplaincy exists in the U.S. for to preserve First Amendment freedoms, and that would include particularly freedom of religion.
Men for en regering, der er en chaplain noget andet. Det er for at overholde frihedslovgivningen, at man sender en chaplain ud.
And in that sense, there's a sort of a phrase that the chaplain corps works with. It's called perform and provide. And that means you perform those things that you can do according to your own background, your own conscience, according to your own ordination vows. And for those things you can't do, you provide by usually networking with other chaplains and other resources.
Og der er to stikord her. Det er perform, provide, og det første det er at udføre noget, og det andet er at stille noget til rådighed. Pege hen på, hvordan man kan blive hjulpet andre steder.
So that's commonly people think, oh, the chaplain has to be everything to everyone, but that's simply not the case.
Nogle tænker, at en chaplain, han skal være alt for alle, men det er ikke rigtigt.
So certainly I was a resource for the soldiers I worked with, whoever the soldier was.
Jeg var en ressourcekilde for de soldater, jeg arbejdede med.
But I never had to step out of my Lutheran mold, if you will.
Men jeg blev aldrig nogensinde bedt om at træde ud af den lutherske base, lutherske muld, som jeg var vokset op i.
And then, so the military, by law, the chaplaincy serves to protect religious free time, expression and to perform it. But then also, the military appreciates the chaplain's ability to provide pastoral care.
Så soldaterpræsten, han skal sikre, at der er religiøs frihed, så at man altså, når man er hjemmefra, så kan man også udøve sin religion der, hvor man er. Og det andet, det han så skal også være præst for de mennesker.
And in that sense, the military regulations have sort of secured chaplains a very special role.
Og disse regler for chaplains, det har sikret soldaterpræsterne.
And what I mean by that is the chaplain in the U.S. military is the only individual in the entire chain of command in the who has complete confidentiality.
Og hvad jeg mener med det, det er, at soldaterpræsten, han er den eneste blandt de overordnede i det militære hierarki, som har tavshedspligt, og som ikke skal udlevere nogen til nogen til andre.
And so that makes the chaplain safe to talk to.
Og det vil sige, at man kan meget tillidsfuldt tale med sin chaplain.
And so the chaplain hears a lot of things.
Og derfor hører en chaplain altså også mangt og meget.
And in fact, if you have time later, I brought this with me. It's a little article. I don't know how Swedish is to read for in Denmark, but I talk a little bit about that there. The lack of peace that so many people experience.
Og her er en artikel i det gule blad, udgivet af LFS i Sverige, hvor jeg har skrevet en artikel. Og her er emnet den fred, som man mangler og har brug for.
So we had what the church sees chaplains as and what the military sees chaplains as. So what are some of the challenges that a chaplain faces?
Hvilke udfordringer står så en chaplain overfor?
There's some obvious ones, separation from family. You're out in the cold and the mud.
Der er, at man er adskilt fra sin familie, og man er langt ude i det beskidte uføre.
Deployments, if those come, or certainly training exercises.
Og det er også de opgaver, man står overfor, og træning.
But then there's challenges that you might not be aware of. One of them is the separation between church and state.
Men så er der også nogle udfordringer, som I måske ikke lige tænker på, og det er adskillelsen mellem kirke og stat.
And in this sense, there's often challenges for the chaplain.
Og her er der udfordringer for en chaplain.
In particular, in the military, there are anti-proselytizing rules.
I don't get
proselytizing. That. You can't openly try to convert people.
Ja, så der er for eksempel det, at en soldaterpræst, han må ikke åbent forsøge at omvende nogen.
But you can answer any questions they ask.
Men på den anden side må du jo besvare alle de spørgsmål, som de stiller.
You can organize events that they would like to come to.
Du kan organisere begivenheder, som de gerne vil være med til.
And other such creative things.
Og andre kreative ting.
And one of the lessons I think that I especially learned early on is if you want to get the word out, which I did.
Og noget af det, som jeg lærte, det var, at når man gerne ønsker, at ordet bliver delt med andre, og det gør, ønsker jeg.
You really have to be intentional.
Så skal du også have en hensigt med det, du siger og gør.
The commander, he won't make you do your job. The commander, he doesn't tell you how to do your job.
Det er ikke generalen. Han siger ikke, hvordan jeg skal udføre mit arbejde.
And he doesn't probably even know what your job really is.
Og han ved sandsynligvis heller ikke, hvad din opgave består i.
So you have to come up with ideas and find the money and make it happen in such a way that the soldiers at least some of them will be interested.
Så det er op til dig som soldat og præst at skabe de her begivenheder og sørge for at soldaterne er interesserede i at deltage.
So oftentimes free lunch was the way I did that.
Så ofte så var det en gratis middag.
Another challenge, particularly during my time, and this has changed very much in the last 7 years.
Der var også andre udfordringer, men meget af det har nok også ændret sig de sidste 7 år.
And here I'm talking about the social moral changes in the cultural climate in the U.S.
Og her tænker jeg så på det sociale, moralske klima, som har ændret sig drastisk i USA de seneste år.
And so 2010, they changed the rules about homosexuality in the military.
I 2010 ændrede man reglerne for homoseksuel adfærd blandt soldater.
And originally they said, this will never be an equal opportunity, that is an equal rights issue.
Oprindeligt så sagde man, at det med homoseksualitet, det bliver aldrig en rettighed, man har på lige fod med andre rettigheder.
But of course within 2 years it was.
Men i løbet af 2 år, så var det en rettighed på linje med alle andre.
And most recently, just this last year, they brought in regulations for transgender soldiers.
Og nu for 2 år siden, der indførte de så regler for soldater, som ønsker at skifte køn.
And speaking about this, I'm not trying to say that it's impossible to be a chaplain.
Jeg mener ikke, at det er umuligt at være soldat og præst, chaplain, i den her situation.
But during my time, I did see that it was getting more difficult.
Men i løbet af de år, jeg var soldat og præst, der blev det for mig tydeligt, at det blev vanskeligere og vanskeligere at være det.
And the chaplain's safety and security within such a system in many ways depends on who his commander is.
Soldaterpræstens tryghed afhænger i den situation meget af hans overordnede.
And in that sense I was always very thankful. I had some wonderful commanders who fully supported my work.
Og der må jeg så sige, at jeg var meget taknemmelig over de befalingsmænd, jeg havde over mig.
And that's not always the case in for every chaplain I knew.
Men det har ikke været tilfældet for alle de andre chaplains, som jeg har kendt.
So on the positive side, what about the blessings and unique opportunities?
Så nu vil jeg sige noget de positive ting. Hvilke muligheder er der?
I think the first and most important of these is that the chaplain is able to go where no other clergy can go.
Blandt velsignelser vil jeg nævne, at en chaplain, han har mulighed for at tage derhen, hvor ingen andre ellers kan komme.
On the military basis, but also during deployments.
So during deployments.
When you're on the field.
Like in Iraq.
Yeah.
Udsat.
Altså det er både at være sammen med på basen, men også være, når de er ude udstationeret.
Yeah.
Uden på basen.
Kuwait, Iraq, Afghanistan. Yeah. Only in chapel. Yeah. So I already mentioned the trust that chaplains enjoy. Another blessing and opportunity. Nobody knows what a chaplain's supposed to do.
Jeg nævnte for det første, at soldaterpræsten, han nyder tillid. Man har tillid til ham. And then you mentioned now.
Oh, another advantage chaplains have is nobody really knows what chaplains do.
Og en anden fordel for en chaplain, det er, at der er ingen, der rigtig ved, hvad der er hans opgave.
In fact, oftentimes, the only guidance you get from your commander.
Så den eneste vejledning, du får fra dine øverstbefalende.
Is chaplain, do your thing.
Og det er bare, chaplain, du skal gøre det, du skal gøre.
So if you have energy and ideas,
så hvis du har energi og idéer,
you can do so many things.
Kan du gøre alt muligt.
Despite the limitations, the sky is the limit.
Altså kun begrænset af, which limitations?
With the rules and all the army rules and
regulations. Kun begrænset af de almindelige regler, der er for soldater.
And I will talk about some of the opportunities I had as my presentation goes on.
Og når jeg nu fortæller videre, så vil jeg fortælle jer om nogle af de ting, som jeg gjorde.
And with that in mind, I thought we would look at some pictures, first from Iraq, then from some training exercises, and then some other unique opportunities I had.
Så vil jeg vise jer nogle billeder, først fra Irak, og så fra nogle træningssessioner, og så nogle andre billeder.
So, welcome to Iraq. This wasn't actually that bad.
Velkommen til Irak. Det var altså ikke helt så slemt, som det her ser ud til.
As one goes further south in Iraq and towards Kuwait,
når man tager længere sydpå i Irak mod Kuwait,
these dust storms can get even worse.
Så bliver de her sandstorme værre og værre.
In fact, they look like thunderstorms as they come near.
Det ser ud som om det er en tordenvejr storm.
But they're only dust.
Men det er bare støv.
But the really bad ones will have lightning.
Og når det er rigtig slemt, så er der også lyn.
And it's so hot there, the weather.
Og det er så drønvarmt.
That in the morning when you wake up and you see it's so cloudy outside.
Og så ser du, at når du vågner om morgenen, at det er rigtig skyet i gåseøjne.
You're excited and you think maybe it's going to be cool.
Så tænker du, måske bliver det lidt køligt i dag.
But no, it's just hot dust.
Men det er bare brandvarmt støv.
So that's Iraq. We lived in these, they were called CHUs, containerized housing units.
Vi levede i sådan en container-lignende boliger.
And they are very beautiful.
De er meget smukke.
My job while I was there was to travel around.
Og mit arbejde, mens jeg var der, var at rejse rundt.
I was with the transportation battalion.
Jeg var sammen med den bataljon, som stod for transport.
And we had soldiers scattered throughout the entire country.
Og vi havde soldater, der var spredt over hele landet.
So my weeks were divided between travel and being back having my services.
Så mit arbejde, det var dels at rejse og dels at være på basen og holde gudstjenester.
Sometimes on the ground.
Nogle gange på jorden.
Sometimes in the air.
Nogle gange i luften.
And from all the way to the Turkish border, down to Basra, over to, we called it Al-Assad, it's in this area, and a lot here in the middle, Baghdad, and north of there, up to Tikrit, and those places. And I sometimes like to say that I met my wife in Al-Assad.
Jeg kan godt lide at fortælle jer, at jeg mødte min kone i Al-Assad.
But that's only a joke.
Men det er bare for sjov.
Because we met online.
Og vi mødtes online.
But I was in Al-Assad.
Men jeg var i Al-Assad, da jeg mødte hende.
I was stationed in Balad.
Min station var i Balad.
But it's there. And one of the most interesting things during my year was to see Iraq just from the air all the time.
Det var meget spændende at se Irak fra luften. Men det gjorde meget.
I always thought it could be a very beautiful country.
Et meget smukt land.
If they could stop fighting and have the opportunity to rebuild the canals and the irrigation and the things that it would take to get the agriculture and everything working well again.
Hvis bare de kunne holde op med at slås og igen få gang i vandingssystemet og landbrugslivet.
Also very interesting in Iraq was there are an awful lot of biblical sites there.
Og så er der også en masse bibelske steder i Irak.
Which somehow I didn't actually know before I got to Iraq.
Som jeg ikke rigtig vidste om før jeg kom der.
But I did get to see a couple of those sites while I was there.
Men jeg så nogle af de lokaliteter, mens jeg var der.
Just as an example, ancient Ur, where Abraham came from.
Den gamle Ur, hvor Abraham kom fra.
Babylon is there. Nineveh, where's Moses? Jonah and those sorts of things.
Jonas by, Nineveh.
Yeah. So Abraham would have traveled like that to go to the Holy Land.
Abraham han rejste den vej for at komme til det hellige land.
So there's an awful lot to see in Iraq if they can figure out how to make peace last.
Så der er så meget at se i Irak, hvis man kan finde ud af at skabe fred.
But don't go in the summer.
Men hvad med at tage derhen om sommeren?
So obviously when you travel you have all your gear on.
Og når du rejser, så har du alt dit grej på.
And then you go.
Og så afsted.
This is from way up in the air.
Og det er så i luften.
In fact it's so high that the air is actually cool again. It's very nice in the summertime.
Det er så højt op nu, så nu er det køligt.
But usually we flew much lower than that.
Men oftest fløj vi lavere.
There's the mountains in northern Iraq in the Kurdish area.
Der er bjergene i det nordlige Irak i det kurdiske område.
Baghdad from the air.
Bagdad fra luften.
And the goal, of course, is to go be with the soldiers. And sometimes that would even include if you end up sitting in a bunker because of a warning.
Det er en bunker. Være i en bunker sammen med soldaterne.
Yeah, so you go where they are and you do what they do. Yeah. So nothing happened that day. We were just there for a long time.
Der skete ikke noget den dag, men vi var der for at beskytte os selv en række timer.
I was very blessed while I was there.
Det var en velsignelse at være der.
None of the soldiers in my unit died.
Der var ingen af soldaterne i min bataljon, som døde.
We had some close calls, but thankfully everybody came home.
Close calls.
Close calls.
What's it?
Yeah.
Det var nogle gange meget tæt på.
Yeah. But you wake up every day thinking maybe today is the day that things change.
Og så vågner man om morgenen og tænker, i dag er det måske den dag, hvor tingene vil ændre sig til det værre.
And for me especially, I really liked Luther's morning prayer.
Og jeg lærte rigtig at holde Martin Luthers morgenbøn.
Because as you're thinking about these things, whether you're traveling or about everything that could possibly happen.
For når man tænker på alt det, der nu kunne ske, når man rejser.
In Luther's morning prayer, he says, "Into your hands I commend myself, my body and soul and all things."
Så siger vi jo i Martin Luthers morgenbøn, jeg befaler mig selv og alt hvad jeg er i dine hænder.
And let your holy angel be with me, that the evil foe may have no power over me.
Lad din hellige engel være med mig, så den onde fjende ikke får nogen magt over mig.
So it brings new meaning to old words oftentimes.
Så de gamle ord fik ny mening.
You see some old things. This is an old Iraqi jet plane.
Og her er et gammelt irakisk fly.
Here's the ziggurat. Though it's remodeled, this is Saddam Hussein actually fixed it up a lot.
Og det er noget, som er genopbygget af Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, he renovated it.
And what was it?
This is the ziggurat.
What is that?
Templer fra det gamle ur.
Yeah, which was actually on a military base.
Og det var på området, hvor vi havde militærbasen.
Yeah, so. So we didn't even have equipment on when we were out there.
Så vi var ikke udrustet når vi gik der.
There's the full picture.
Og der er hele billedet der af templet.
And it's actually one of the better archaeological sites I've ever been to.
Og det er et af de bedre arkeologiske steder jeg har besøgt.
There's up in the Nineveh area, which is Mosul today.
Og det er i Nineveh området.
And I didn't get to see ancient Nineveh, but I knew I was close.
Jeg så ikke den gamle Nineveh by, men jeg var tæt på.
But that's where the fighting right now is going on with ISIS and the Iraqi forces particularly.
Det er der rigtig nu er kamp mellem irakiske styrker og ISIS.
I'm often sad when I think about Iraq.
Jeg er trist til mode når jeg tænker på Irak.
That I'm still not completely sure if it was about why the war was fought.
I'm not
completely sure why the war began. Why?
Jeg er ikke helt sikker på hvorfor krigen skulle begynde.
But when I was there, I always thought since we started it, that is the U.S., that we had a responsibility to the country.
Men jeg tænkte, at eftersom vi nu var gået ind i krigsførelse, så var det også vores ansvar at være der og hjælpe.
And so I'm sad, and so many of the soldiers I worked with who experienced so much worse than I did, then to see Iraq in many ways given just over to ISIS, and it in many ways become worse than it was ever before.
Men for de soldater, som jeg var sammen med, var det måske endnu værre at se, hvordan at Irak blev overladt til ISIS.
And then also as a Christian, you think, particularly the Christians in these areas, it seems like everything that happens, it just goes worse for the Christians.
Og det er også sådan, at jo værre det gik til der, jo værre fik de kristne det også.
So one thing, time in the military really teaches you.
Så tiden som i militæret, det lærer dig noget.
Is, as St. Paul reminds us, as Christians, to pray for our leaders.
Apostlen Paulus, han siger, vi skal bede for vores øvrighed, for vores ledere.
Because you see so clearly how decisions that our leadership makes impacts the peace we enjoy or don't enjoy.
For vi indser jo i sådan en krig, hvordan at det som lederne i regeringen, hvad de beslutter, det berører så mange mennesker.
And it's truly somewhat frightening to see this power in such a raw form.
Og det er virkelig frygteligt at se magt i denne her rå og brutale form.
That when one person says something, things happen.
At når så et menneske udsteder en befaling, så sker de her ting.
And so we are reminded to pray for these people who are entrusted with such power.
Så vi er opfordret af Gud til at bede for de mennesker, som har fået en sådan stor magt betroet.
And I think that's true whether you're in Denmark or Norway or in the US.
Og jeg mener, at det gælder uanset om man er i Irak eller i Norge eller i Danmark.
My greatest privilege as a chaplain was when I got to preach.
Mit største privilegium som chaplain, det var når jeg kunne prædike.
And one of the wonderful things as a chaplain were how faithful my congregants, my soldiers were.
Og jeg mærkede stor trofasthed hos de soldater, som var min menighed.
And I should clarify that most of the soldiers never go to chapel.
Og jeg skal uddybe det. De fleste af mine soldater, de gik aldrig til gudstjeneste.
But those who come were very very faithful.
Men dem som kom, de var meget trofaste.
I had services in a sort of utility room.
Jeg havde gudstjenester i et mandskabsrum.
So not a beautiful church building like this.
Ikke en smuk bygning som den her.
But I had a wonderful congregation.
Men jeg havde en herlig menighed.
And unless they were on mission on a Sunday, they were there.
Og de var der om søndagen.
And for us, it was a very that was the one time of the week when you felt like you were home again.
Og det var den dag i ugen, hvor at man følte man var hjemme.
And you celebrate Christmas together and the other church holidays, and you sing the same songs. We had the same old hymnal, so it was wonderful.
Vi holdt gudstjeneste med juletid og påsketid, og vi sang de samme salmer, som var blev sunget derhjemme.
And we had a newer hymnal, but they didn't want that. They wanted the old hymnal.
Vi havde også en nyere salmebog, men der var ingen, der ønskede den. De ville have den gamle, som de havde sunget derhjemme.
And I was happy because I liked the older hymnal better.
Og det var jeg selv også glad for jeg kunne bedre lide den ældre salmebog.
So that was one year of my 6.5 years as a chaplain.
Så det var det ene af mine 6.5 år som chaplain.
The rest of the time I was stationed in Germany, either in Stuttgart or near Nuremberg.
Resten af min tid som chaplain var jeg udstationeret i Stuttgart og nær ved Nuremberg.
And in many ways my life was a bit more normal those years.
Og i årene der var mit liv mere normalt.
But particularly the last 2 years I was with the cavalry squadron.
Men de sidste 2 år, I was with the
cavalry. The cavalry squadron, battalion.
Ja. En bataljon, der hedder det der.
Yeah, cavalry, they're the ones who used to ride on horses,
okay.
But now they ride in tanks.
Okay, altså kavaleriet, men det er altså i dag dem der kører i tanksene.
But we still have the nice Stetson cowboy hats.
Men vi har den stadigvæk den der sjove cowboy hat, the hat you.
Yeah, I still have that. That for our fancy occasions, I had my hat.
Han har stadigvæk den der kavalerihat.
Yeah, I have a picture later.
Og han havde også med her den 19. juni.
But certainly you've heard of all the military exercises in Eastern Europe currently.
Men I har nok også hørt om militærøvelser i det østlige Europa for nylig.
And I don't always know what to think about all of that.
Og jeg ved ikke rigtigt, hvad jeg selv skal tænke om det.
But I was there.
Men jeg var der.
In Poland, in Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary.
Jeg var i de lande der.
All those in Turkey.
Og i Tyrkiet.
And the month I got out of the military, my unit was up in the Baltic countries.
Og efter jeg havde forladt militæret, så havde de øvelser op i de baltiske lande.
So, like I say, I don't know what to think about all this, but I hope our leaders all know what they're doing.
Jeg ved ikke rigtig, hvad jeg skal tænke om det, men jeg håber, at vores ledere, de ved, hvorfor de gør det.
But fortunately, my job was to take care of soldiers, and I knew what to think about that.
Men min opgave var jo at tage mig af soldater, og det vidste jeg godt, hvad jeg skulle stille op med.
The next pictures are just from some military training opportunities I had in Germany.
Og de næste billeder, det er billeder fra militærtræning i Tyskland.
Really nice weather.
Dejligt vejr.
It's kind of like camping, but you take all the fun out of it.
Det er ligesom at være for camping, bare uden der er noget sjovt.
But you get some wonderful opportunities. And it's surprising sometimes what soldiers will show up to your little services when they're really having a bad day.
Og det er helt fantastisk, hvordan soldater de stiller op til en lille gudstjeneste, når de selv har haft en rigtig dårlig dag.
Plus they have nothing else to do in the field because their cell phones are taken away from them.
Og desuden så har de heller ikke andet, de kan foretage sig, for deres mobiltelefoner har de ikke lov til at bære.
And so they begin to think about life again and what's really important.
Og så begynder de at tænke over livet og hvad er det vigtige her i livet.
And so you have some really wonderful opportunities when you're in the field.
Og så har man nogle rigtig gode muligheder, når man er ude i marken.
My last unit, I said tanks, we actually use Strykers. They're armored vehicles.
Jeg sagde, at vi kørte i tanks, men det var altså andre lettere køretøjer. Yeah.
And most of the cavalry uses tanks. Most cavalry units have tanks.
De fleste, de bruger tanks.
And my unit always complained that they didn't have tanks.
Og min afdeling, den klagede over, at vi ikke fik lov at køre i tanks.
But it's always very interesting when you're at. So there's so many things that you would never experience otherwise when you're doing these things.
Men det er jo interessant, for der er ting, man får lov at gøre, som man ellers aldrig nogensinde fik lov at røre ved.
Just eating out there.
Nu spiser vi.
But most meals weren't like that. That's actually a nice meal.
Det der, det er altså et rigtigt festmåltid. De fleste måltider var ikke så fine. Yeah.
Because that's warm and it's ready for you.
For det er varmt, det der.
Among my chaplain responsibilities, I had marriage events.
Og blandt mine opgaver som chaplain havde jeg også samvær med ægtefæller.
And depending where the money came from, I can make them Christian events or just regular events.
Og afhængigt af hvor pengene kom fra til de her møder, så kunne jeg gøre det til kristne eller til almindelige samvær for ægtepar.
But if you're smart about how you plan things, even in the normal events, you can plan maybe an optional hour to talk about how faith and marriage go together.
Men hvis du er lidt opfindsom, så kan du godt under sådan en begivenhed der vælge at sige noget om, hvordan at tro og ægteskab hører sammen.
So you just try to make opportunities.
Så du prøver at skabe nogle muligheder.
Our marriage events were usually in Garmisch-Partenkirchen. In the Alps in Germany.
Vores samvær med ægtefæller, det var som regel i Garmisch-Partenkirchen.
Nobody really liked to be there. I'm just joking.
Og det var fantastisk at være.
Ja, det var fantastisk. So, cavalry, in the military you have ceremonies. The chaplain often has a invocation prior to that.
Og her ser I så kavaleriet, og de har hvad kalder man det? Ja. De stiller op.
And a lot of times chaplains are pressured not to pray in Jesus' name. Chaplains a lot of times receive pressure not to pray in Jesus' name.
Og ofte så bliver chaplains, de bliver presset til ikke at bede I Jesu navn.
And that's when you're really thankful if you have a good commander.
Og der er det, at du er meget taknemmelig, hvis at din øverstbefalende, han er god.
Particularly like my last commander, he really liked it.
Særligt min seneste øverstbefalende, han ville rigtig gerne have bad I Jesu navn.
But there's also times they don't like it.
Der er også tider, hvor man ikke ønsker det.
And you have to be prepared to get in trouble.
Og så skal du være klar over, at du kommer I problemer.
I said I have a picture of my Stetson.
Så her er min Stetson hat.
So this was at the military ball we had last spring.
Og det var vores militærfest, vi havde I foråret.
And it's just a different life.
Et andet liv.
There's my wife.
Det er min kone.
And one of the special opportunities I had was often to lead trips.
Og en af de særlige anledninger jeg havde, det var at lede sådan en tur.
And my trips were the most exciting.
Og de ture jeg guidede, de var meget interessante.
The trips I ended up leading most of the time were Luther and Reformation trips.
Og den tur jeg for det meste tog på som leder, det var reformationstur.
Because the people with the money found out I knew a little bit about Luther and the Reformation.
Så folk med penge, de vidste godt, at jeg vidste noget om Luther og reformationen.
When I was in college, I spent a couple summers in Wittenberg with working with tourism.
Den gang jeg studerede, der var jeg en hel del sommer I Wittenberg og studerede.
So I had a little experience.
Så jeg havde noget erfaring.
This is in the new gymnasium in Wittenberg that was renovated by the LCMS.
Og det er den latinskole, som I Wittenberg, som blevet renoveret af Missouri-synoden.
And I asked a friend of mine to teach the soldiers about Bach.
Og jeg bad en af mine venner om at undervise om Bach.
He's got his PhD, his doctorate in music performance.
Og han lavede en PhD om musik.
So he was very helpful.
Han var meget stor hjælp.
My favorite trip, I featured the three individuals who I think are some of the foremost, maybe even role models in our Lutheran tradition.
Der tre, som rollemodeller for mig I den lutherske tradition.
So we learned about Luther, Bach, and Gustavus Adolphus.
Og den ene det Luther, den anden det Bach, og den tredje who? Who is the third one?
Gustav Adolf.
Gustav Adolf.
And my boss, he was my last commander. He was a history professor at the U.S. Military Academy.
Og min boss der, han var professor I historie på et militærakademi.
And he was so excited that he drew up all the battlefield maps and overlaid them on modern day maps so we knew where on the battlefield we were.
Og han tegnede alle de her slagmarker op på et kort og lagde det ovenpå et moderne kort, så vi nu kunne se hvor havde de forskellige slag stået I historien.
But it was a wonderful opportunity with Bach and his music, Gustavus Adolphus as a king, but also as a military officer, and then Luther, to explore the Christian understanding of vocation in different areas.
Det var så fint at studere Gustav Adolf som konge og militærmand, og Bach og Luther, og også undersøge, hvordan at lære ham kaldet blev forkyndt af dem.
And soldiers, if they couldn't relate maybe to Luther, they could certainly relate to Gustav Adolf.
Og hvis ikke soldaterne de kunne forholde sig til Martin Luther, så kunne de I hvert fald forholde sig til kong Gustav Adolf.
And so we went to the Thomaskirche in Leipzig.
Så vi tog også til Thomaskirken I Leipzig.
And we saw many other things also. We went to Buchenwald when vocation goes wrong.
Vi kom også til
Buchenwald.
Buchenwald, altså en koncentrationslejr, yeah. hvor tingene jo gik frygtelig galt.
Wartburg.
Og det Wartburg.
And so that's a little bit about the chaplaincy. Currently, I'm a student again. I'm no longer in the military.
Så det var lidt om at være soldat og præst. Jeg er ikke det mere, men
and now I have a wonderful opportunity to study Luther in depth.
Nu er jeg student igen, og nu har jeg mulighed for at studere Luther i dybden.
And so I'm working on a project with Luther's Genesis lectures and Luther's understanding about really the role of children in the family.
Jeg studerer Martin Luther, og jeg studerer særligt temaet
the blessing that children
velsignelsen af at have børn og velsignelsen af en familie.
Yeah. And also it's I also wanted to say that it's been a real blessing for me to discover the Scandinavian Lutheran churches here in Denmark, also in Norway.
Jeg vil også sige, at det har været en velsignelse for mig at opdage og lære at kende den lutherske kirke i Danmark her og så også i Norge.
Because the church is never without its struggles. It's always the street in the kirke.
Kirken er aldrig uden kamp.
And also in the Missouri Synod, we have our struggles.
Også i Missouri-synoden har vi vores kampe.
And it's very and sometimes people don't want to struggle anymore.
Og der er nogle gange, at vi mennesker, vi ikke har lyst til at kæmpe mere.
And so it's been very encouraging for me to get to know your guys' stance and also Norway and your work to stand firm in the faith.
Det har været dejligt for mig at lære jer at kende lidt og se også, hvordan I ønsker at stå fast på troen.
So it's a privilege to be here and I'll probably conclude with that.
Og jeg vil afslutte med at sige, at det er en velsignelse at være sammen med jer. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
If there's questions or however you want to do it.
Er der spørgsmål?
Det er noget uklart for mig. Hvem er det egentlig, der har ansat dig? Er det militær? Og kunne det så ikke så godt have været katolsk eller presbyteriansk eller andet?
So, jeg har det. To kirke og regering har indsat mig, og jeg måtte fornye. I had to keep them both happy. So jeg kunne ikke tjene som chaplain, som military priest, hvis ikke Missouri Synod fornye med tjenestemænd. For example, hvis jeg skal begynde at fejre katolske messe, skal jeg ikke få lov at fortsætte som chaplain. Der er ting, man kan ikke gøre, men militær har betalt mig. Så de, man har to chefer, to bosses.
Man har to chefer.
Chefer, ja. Det var spørgsmålet. Ja.
Vi så lidt gamle ud i dem af de mennesker nede i Irak. Hvad var de?
They looked rather old, those who were in your congregation in Iraq.
Det er sant.
Were they employed?
Were they?
Were they employed? Were they soldiers or?
Ja, invar ikke. Altså invar ikke soldat, han var civilist. Der er mange civilist der som gjorde afslagsarbeid. De lager mat, de reparerer militære bil, alle mulige ting. Og der var også fælde, at unge soldater, man finder de ikke så ofte i kirken. De ældre soldater, de kommer ofte til kirke end den unge. Kanskje tror de at ingen skal se til dem, eller at de tvinger at ha ikke å gjøre med troen. Men det var sånn.
Det
Kan der forstå meg hvis jeg prøver å snakke litt norsk? Går det?
Ja.
Ok.
Kan jeg også forstå? Så er det norsk.
Ja.
Andre spørgsmål?
Ja.
Ja, jeg tænker på, at det er svært at forkynde evangeliet ind i en sammenhæng, hvor man ser en masse uretfærdigt, og så tænker, hvor er Gud i det her? Så når der er mange lidelser og meget krig, så kan man tænke, hvor er Gud? Hvilken udfordring var det at forkynde evangeliet ind i den situation?
I think I understood which challenges did I experience to preach the gospel in
the situation
in, yes.
where there's much suffering and where is God? Injustice.
Yeah. My unit was a transportation. We were movement control, and most of my soldiers never left the base.
Min enhed, det var de stod for transport, og de fleste de forlod aldrig basen.
I traveled by far the most in my unit.
Jeg var den der rejste mest.
So the soldiers who I was with, they weren't out in the midst of it.
Så de soldater jeg arbejdede med, de var ikke ude i marken.
But later on when I was with the cavalry.
Men senere da jeg var sammen med kavaleriet.
Those were the soldiers who had been in the middle of it.
Der var jeg sammen med soldater, som havde været midt ude i morasset.
And there you see much more clearly the human cost of having lost friends, fellow soldiers, and also having caused harm through actions they had taken in warfare.
Og der oplevede vi rigtigt, hvordan at man havde lidt stort tab menneskeligt.
And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that many of them. They always live with it. It'll never be left behind.
Det er ikke nogen overraskelse, det er ikke nogen overdrivelse at sige, at mange af dem, de vil aldrig nogensinde lægge det bag sig.
Most of them learned to live with their experiences.
De arbejdede med at leve med de erfaringer, de havde gjort.
Even if they're always there. But there are some who never quite come to, they don't come to grips.
Men der er nogen, der ikke rigtig kan have det.
And maybe you've heard about it, about the suicide rate amongst soldiers and veterans, those who have left the military. It's quite high.
I har nok hørt, at selvmordsraten blandt dem, der har været soldater, den er høj.
And during my time, it wasn't uncommon for me to have to talk to a soldier who was thinking about killing himself or who had attempted to.
Og det var ikke ualmindeligt for mig at tale med en soldat, som overvejede selvmord.
But none of my soldiers did kill themselves. Well, there was a few who had tried, but it happened. But a couple months after I left my last unit, one of the soldiers did end his life.
Der var nogen, der havde forsøgt at begå selvmord, men der var ikke nogen, der døde, mens jeg var med dem. Men nogen gjorde det senere.
And in some senses, that was connected with the human cost of having been in such situations.
Og årsagen til de gjorde det har helt sikkert været forbundet med de store omkostninger de havde måttet mærke som soldater.
And I think when you think about it's called PTSD, post traumatic stress disorder. When you think about PTSD, when you think about abuse, when you think about family problems, when you think about drug and sex addictions. And all of these things, the size and scope of sin in this world and the devil's work takes on a larger proportion than we often like to think.
Og når man er derude og så har at gøre med forskellige meget, meget grove former for synd, så ser man, hvor slemt det rigtigt kan være. Altså misbrug, abuse and
everything.
Yeah.
Abuse, and so also the need for him who gives us peace, Jesus.
Så der bliver behovet for ham, som giver os fred, meget tydeligt. spørgsmål?
Et spørgsmål til.
Du gik nadvånd ud til nogen. Dem du delte den nadvånd ud til, var det nogen, der kommer fra Missouri?
Was my service, those who came to my service.
To the Lord's Supper.
Yes.
Dem som kom til nadver hos dig, var det nogen fra Missouri?
Yeah. There was traditionally this thought that if you're a chaplain, you can't practice close communion.
Det er en udbredt opfattelse, at hvis man er chaplain, soldaterpræst, så kan man ikke praktisere det, vi kalder lukket nadver.
It's not true.
Men det er ikke rigtigt.
I'm sure emergency situations could exist.
Jo, der er undtagelses situationer, hvor man er i nødsituation.
But when I was in Iraq, we also had two other ELCA chaplains on the base.
Men der hvor jeg var chaplain, der havde vi også to andre præster, som kom fra den større evangelisk-lutherske kirke i USA, liberale kirke.
The only reason I would have not practiced close communion was to make them happy.
Den eneste årsag til, at jeg så skulle have praktiseret åben nadver, det skulle være bare for at tilfredsstille de to præster.
So it was. So I'm not of the opinion that you have to drop your confession just because you're in a unique situation.
Nej, jeg mener ikke, man skal lægge sin bekendelse på hylden, fordi man er i en særlig situation.
But and also through maintaining one's confession, there are sometimes opportunities to teach and instruct.
Men netop når man så holder fast ved sin kirkelige praksis, så er der rigtig anledning til at undervise.
And I'm not trying to say that I had huge successes as a chaplain.
Jeg vil ikke påstå, at jeg havde stor succes som chaplain.
But perhaps a couple of times it made a positive difference.
Men jeg tror, at det nogle gange gjorde en positiv forskel, at jeg var der.
And most of my baptisms were my own kids.
Og de fleste af de dåb, jeg foretog, det var mine egne børn, jeg døbte.
Just to put it in perspective.
Bare for, at I kan se dimensionerne rigtigt. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.